isn't sure that it will be taken seriously or that they will be brought to trial. Anti-settlement activist Bashar al-Gharyouti, who is based in the town of Gharyout, south of Nablus, said that the attacks taking place in the West Bank by Zionist settler gangs are an organized and coordinated policy with the Zionist occupation army. He describes the Israeli regime army checkpoints and the giant earth barriers constructed by settlers in the West Bank as creating prison-like conditions for Palestinians. Such barriers prevent the villages from supporting each other and confronting gangs of settlers who are preparing to take revenge on us in all locations in the West Bank, he said. The current situation is the most difficult in years. Al-Gharyouti said the settlers are the ones in charge and that, with the Zionist regime's army's protection, they are able to commit horrendous crimes throughout the West Bank. Meanwhile, Wafa News Agency wrote, a comprehensive strike is observed across the governorates of the West Bank, including in the occupied city of Al-Quds, recently to denounce the ongoing Israeli aggression against Palestinian people in the Gaza Strip and the West Bank, which has so far resulted in the killing of more than 8,610 Palestinians and injuring more than 23,000. The strike, called for by the National Liberation Movement Fatah, affected all aspects of life, and thus universities, banks, and shops were closed amid calls to escalate the confrontation with the occupation in all fields of confrontation with the occupation in defense of Palestinian people, their sacred right to freedom and independence.
The amount of groundwater storage in the Gaza Strip is very few. Studies made by the Palestinian Water Authority, PWA, and WHO indicate that the amount has been decreasing. In 1975, the amount of groundwater storage was 1,200 million cubic meters. The amount decreased to 800 million cubic meters in 1995. The storage is expected to be exhausted in 2020 as the population grows day by day.
طبعا احنا الان نقف عند البئر الشيخ رضوان رقم 1.
We are now at Al Sheikh Radwan well number 1. Being exhausted, the well was replaced with another well dug by the Gaza municipality using the same equipment as the former one. We are now going to the new alternative well. This is the water meter of the well that measures water supply quantities. This well supplies 120 cubic meters per hour. It's a relatively high rate in Gaza compared to the idea that the groundwater aquifer has become shallow. The annual recharge quantity of the well is estimated at approximately 50 million cubic meters. In contrast, average annual demand of water is estimated at approximately 200 million cubic meters. So there is a big gap between supply and demand. This shortage caused salinity of groundwater. According to the international standards, the maximum chloride concentration in drinkable water is 250 milligrams per liter. Groundwater supplied through municipalities' networks contains approximately 1,000 milligrams per liter. Sometimes chloride reaches 2,000 milligrams per liter. This is due to seawater intrusion. There is scarcity of water. What can we do? We just keep overpumping. The aquifer is like a piece of sponge full of drinkable water. When we pumped the entire quantity of water that was refilled by rainfall, groundwater turned saline due to seawater intrusion. Water supplied to this area is too saline. Frankly, it is not suitable for human use. In addition, we suffer from interruption of the water supply. Sometimes, water becomes available at the same time as a power failure. So I have to use an electrical generator, like this one here, to turn on the water pump engine for pumping the water in this tank to the tanks in the roof. I put this water tank here to get it full of water when water becomes available during a power failure. Actually, the water we receive is very saline. It is as saline as seawater. Though we use it in our daily domestic use, nobody can drink it. Citrus, in general, is affected by water varieties. This type of citrus is of good quality. This is due to the good quality of water that irrigates citrus trees in this area and makes them grow well and produce better quality products. The more the salinity rate increases, the more chloride affects citrus. Citrus is sensitive. It does not produce well unless it is appropriately maintained. Orange trees have been replaced with these olive trees. We hope this will succeed and compensate for the loss of citrus. Olive trees can bear salinity and more dangerous time factors. They need less water than citrus trees, which need large quantities of water. Olive can bear saline water much better than citrus because the roots of an olive tree are stronger. Water in this area was of good quality, but now the salinity rate is high. This grove used to produce 200 tons. Now it is all dried up because of the scarcity of good quality water. The quality of water is relative. Water in the area of the Gaza Valley is not of as good a quality as it is in the northern or southern areas of the Strip. In the northern area, you can plant anything because of the good quality of its water and soil. Even the soil quality is relative. The quality of water in Rafah, for instance, is good compared to the water in the Gaza Valley area.
Groundwater is the only local water resource that meets the growing demand of water for housekeeping, agriculture, manufacturing, etc. in the Gaza Strip. The qualitative and quantitative decline of groundwater is related to the resources like rainfall that recharges the groundwater aquifer.
This well was established about 60 or 70 years ago. Now it is abandoned because of the extremely high concentration of salinity in its water.
الشجر الزيتون
Olives depend on the rainfall in January. When it does not rain during this month, olives' productivity declines. As you see, the trees in this grove are dried and about to die because of the scarcity of good quality water. The average rainfall is stable here. The annual average reaches approximately 110 million liters. But the Gaza Strip's needs grow constantly. According to some recent estimates, Gaza's annual need is approximately 200 million liters of rainfall. Just half of that quantity is available annually. Most rainfall in the Gaza Strip is missed due to widespread construction and concrete structures, which cover 30% of the area of the Gaza Strip. This percentage may be, according to the international standards, very high. It limits utilization of rainfall to recharge the aquifer.
Gaza Valley, one of the longest valleys in Palestine, was one of the main sources that recharged the groundwater aquifer of the Gaza Strip. It stems from the hills of a small village in Hebron. It extends from the east of Gaza to the Mediterranean coast in the west. It is about 160 kilometers in length. Its length in the Gaza Strip is 9 kilometers inside Gaza. The annual amount of its water runoff is estimated at 20 million cubic meters. The Israeli occupation blocks the flow of water and prevents it from reaching the Gaza Strip.
The Gaza Valley area should be a nature preserve that protects Palestinian wildlife and migrating birds. This valley extends from the east to the Mediterranean Sea in the west. Unfortunately, the Israeli occupation prevented the water of the valley from reaching Gaza. Thirty years ago, this area, which extends from the Al Zaytun neighborhood to the Gaza Valley, was known for its citrus groves, and orange groves in particular. The Gaza Valley is one of the thefts of the Palestinians' water resources committed by the Israeli occupation. We are talking about 20 million cubic meters that have been stolen annually since the building of those dams 40 years ago. So after building those dams and stopping the Gaza Valley's water, we are talking about hundreds of millions of cubic liters stolen from the Israeli side.
Sources of groundwater in the Gaza Strip depend on the coastal aquifer, which extends from the Carmel Mountain in the north to the Sinai Peninsula in the south. Gaza portion of the coastal aquifer, groundwater, is being a subject of a secret war that only Allah and specialists of the field are aware of.
The Israeli occupation has built thousands of wells around the Gaza Strip, preventing approximately 30 to 40 million cubic meters from naturally reaching the Strip. So preventing the water of this valley from running into the Gaza Strip is a theft of Palestinian water resources committed by the occupation.
The Israeli occupation does not only steal Gaza's portion of the groundwater in the aquifer. The occupation has stolen hundreds of millions of cubic meters of water through the Israeli settlements that had existed in the Gaza Strip for tens of years.
This area was occupied by Israel. It was known as the Gush Katif settlement. The Israeli occupation used to steal groundwater from the area. This pipe is the only evidence that was used in stealing hundreds of millions of cubic meters of drinkable groundwater. Now we are in Al-Mawasi area in Khan Yunis. This area suffers severely from water scarcity and salinity. Its groundwater became undrinkable. We want the international community to punish Israel for stealing water. In the 1970s, you could find drinkable groundwater 30 centimeters in depth and 10 meters before the shore. Now the groundwater in this spot, which is 800 meters away from the sea, is found undrinkable.
Irrigation water and treated wastewater are some recharge resources of the aquifer and the Gaza Strip. Some studies indicate 15 to 20% of the volume of domestic water supply recharges the aquifer.
Wastewater basins have been established in Al-Mawasi instead of those basins close to Sofa Terminal. They are now located over the Khan Yunis groundwater aquifer. Actually, this has not succeeded. The wastewater gathers to the west of the basins, which occupy approximately 1,000 dunams. This badly affects olives, guavas, mangoes, and the greenhouses. Palm trees are the only trees that are able to stand this kind of water. Because of the intrusion of wastewater into the aquifer, we closed 25 wells. Some health reports indicate that the water of those wells includes some diseases that may be dangerous to children. I close this well and get water from another resource. I went to an organization with a report that indicates the water in my area is not drinkable at all. I use a water filter at my expense. The water filter is inside. Now the water becomes drinkable. Please come in. Now we surrender to the water condition. I and my cousins in the area depend on water filters because we don't want to lose our children as we lost the trees.
Wastewater quantities annually generated in the Gaza Strip are estimated at approximately 32 million cubic meters. 70 to 80% of the quantity is drained with no treatment.
The Gaza Valley is, as you see, now used to drain more than 10,000 cubic meters of the Middle Gaza Governorate's untreated wastewater into the sea. Unfortunately, this wastewater, with all the toxic materials it includes, reaches the sea through the Gaza Valley. More than 12,000 cubic meters of raw wastewater are drained into the Sea of Gaza. These amounts spread due to the convection currents and tides of the sea. Our study found wet and dry soil contaminated with some toxic elements of the wastewater.
Wastewater is drained into the sea, whose pollution becomes a risk to Gaza's marine life.
This place was a wastewater drainage spot, one of about 25 distributed along the shore of the Gaza Strip. Wastewater drainage to the sea badly affects fish reproduction. In such an infertile sea environment, fish will abandon the area. So some types of shore fish, which existed in good quantities in the past, are rarely seen by Palestinian fishermen now.
One of the sea pollution disadvantages is polluting some types of fish that Gazans eat.
Mullet and tuna, which are some of the shore fish in Gaza, are found slightly contaminated. But according to our study, this pollution in the fish won't move to humans. We are concerned with the future of fish resources and the absence of a lot of kinds of fish resulting from untreated toxic wastewater drainage into the sea. If children eat fish that are fed substances, including high rates of chemicals, they will be at risk of cancer and other diseases.
Eating polluted fish has a long-term risk on human health. Another short term is imposed on big numbers of Gazan vacationers who gather on the beach, the only resort in the Gaza Strip in the summer, regardless whether the seawater is polluted or not.
This phenomenon is unhealthy to Gaza vacationers. Our study focuses mainly on parasites' existence. We found that 50% of seawater samples are contaminated with parasites. These parasites are dangerous to children, pregnant women, and old people whose immunity is weak and who may suffer chronic diseases. Parasites cause anemia, gastroenteritis, skin diseases, and conjunctivitis, or eye diseases, as soon as contaminated water touches the skin.
Protecting Gaza beach and groundwater from being polluted by wastewater depends mainly on wastewater treatment plant's capacity to treat such quantities of wastewater. There are three wastewater treatment plants in the Gaza Strip. These plants face some difficulties in its work, such as power failure. Power failure makes the plants unable to treat the entire quantities of wastewater drained to them.
This is the Al Sheikh Ajlin wastewater treatment plant in the south of Gaza City. This plant was designed to treat 40,000 cubic meters of wastewater. Unfortunately, the actual quantity of wastewater produced by Gaza City exceeds its capacity. The actual quantity is 60,000 cubic meters. Wastewater is collected inside Gaza City. As you see, it does not work because of power failure. This badly affects the quality of water treated by the plant. These machines are aerators. Such a quality of wastewater harms the life of the Palestinians. When Palestinian vacationers go to the beach, they are exposed to the harmful effects of untreated wastewater discharged at the shore. This exposure has had bad effects on vacationers' health. Even groundwater in Gaza might be affected by the wastewater's harmful effects because of an incapability to collect and treat the entire amount of wastewater.
So groundwater is at risk of leakage of untreated wastewater and seawater intrusion. This has bad effects on Gaza people, for example, agriculture in general and citrus in particular, which need ample aggregation, are badly affected.
In the 1970s, citrus was considered the yellow gold of the Gaza Strip. It occupied the first position in Gaza agricultural production. Now citrus is estimated at approximately 6% of the entire production. It used to be approximately 90%. Poor quality water badly affected citrus and resulted in its extinction day by day, to the point that you can hardly find a local orange. Oh Hassan, we have happy memories in this grove. This grove produced 200 tons of oranges and grapefruits. The grove was as green as basil. The trees were fruity. May Allah punish the Israelis who destroyed our groves. The production of the grove declined from 200 tons in 2009 to 0 tons now. It was dried in 3 or 4 years. Can you see this? The current state of its trees makes you cry. This is Abu Hussein. Will you come? I need to buy some water. We have run out of water. I will be waiting for you. Please don't be late. Bye.
Water crisis in the Gaza Strip was aggravated by the fact that water supply for domestic use became undrinkable. This has urged people to purchase from street vendors fresh drinkable water, which is pre-treated in special water desalination plants.
As you see, this is our suffering. Excuse me, I have to bring the hose for the fresh, drinkable water. Our suffering from water is incessant. It is a big problem. I hope it can be solved someday. Unfortunately, the problem is growing. Sometimes when I call the water vendor, he sounds busy. I excuse him for this because he is really overloaded. Everybody calls him for drinkable water. The economic situation in Gaza is very hard. Some people cannot afford to buy water. Those poor people are forced to drink the saline water supplied by the municipality.
In Khan Yunis, poor people bring drinkable water from a water desalination plant for free.
Haja, why do you bring water from this place?
The water in our house is very salty. It does not taste good when used in making tea or milk or any other thing.
A diverse range of programs. Youth. Spirituality. Culture. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
There are fears that the UK, which is suffering from structural economic conditions, factors related to the underlying weakness of the UK economy, and the fallout from Brexit, will leave the UK behind while most other developed economies expand. Concerning this issue, we have taken a look at world media for further details. Please stay with us to hear more about the story. The Guardian reported the recent rise in interest rates has been blamed for ending Britain's wealth boom and causing total household wealth to plunge by a quarter since the COVID-19 pandemic. A report by the Resolution Foundation, a think tank, and Financial Fairness Trust, an independent charity historically funded by Standard Life, now known as Aberdeen, said the fall was due to a drop in the house prices and pension pots, which account for about £4 out of every £5 of total wealth, and played a leading role in rising wealth across the country over the 40 years leading up to the pandemic. However, both have fallen in value since the Bank of England started raising interest rates in December 2021. While total household wealth was worth 840% of gross domestic product, GDP, in 2021, it had tumbled to 630% of GDP this year. Ian Mulhern, a research associate at the Resolution Foundation, said interest rate rises have ended Britain's wealth boom and caused total household wealth to plummet since the pandemic. Higher rates have increased the cost of mortgages, resulting in subdued demand from borrowers, which has in turn forced sellers to lower house prices. Pension funds are large holders of government bonds, the prices of which have fallen as investors demand a higher rate of return due to rising inflation expectations. The Bank of England is due to announce its next interest rate decision in coming days. While policymakers are most likely to hold the base rate at 5.25%, the prospect of higher for longer interest rates suggests Britain's household wealth could continue to erode. Resolution Foundation explained that the impact was likely to be uneven and would vary across ages and regions. For example, a fall in total wealth tends to be good news for younger people who are able to buy homes at a cheaper price and who will get a better rate of return on bonds bought today rather than a few years ago. But falling house prices could be bad news for people who already own a home in cheaper areas, such as Scotland, Wales, and north of England, given that it could more quickly put some households at risk of falling into a negative equity, where the property is worth less than the remaining value of the mortgage. Mulhern said regional disparities were already apparent. Mulhern added, the impact of this fall has not been spread evenly across the country, with less wealthy areas like Scotland, Wales, and the north of England seeing the biggest wealth falls, and high house price areas like the south and east of England and the lowest. He added, while the situation may change in the future, these regional disparities again highlight the need for a range of reforms to insulate households against wealth volatility that transfers resources between generations based on luck. Fairer and more effective taxation of wealth is a critical part of that agenda, with Britain's biggest wealth tax, council tax, in particular, need of reform to make it more fairly targeted and less regressive. Meanwhile, the Daily Mail writes, according to new figures, one in four UK households living in social housing was forced to go without heating at times last winter to reduce the cost of record high energy bills. The number of households living in temperatures below 18 degrees for pre-rates last winter climbed by about 240,000 compared with the winter before, raising concerns among fuel poverty charities that rocketing energy bills are posing a risk to people's health. The data was collected from smart thermostats fitted in about 20,000 households in social housing developments by the energy analytics firm Suici. It showed that 23.5% did not heat their homes for a period of at least 1 week last winter, compared with 17.4% the year before. The company analyses billions of data points to provide social housing landlords with insights that can help to improve the energy efficiency of properties, but its analysis uncovered a rising number of households living in cold homes. It also said households that do not heat their homes to at least 18 degrees Celsius lead to higher NHS admissions and are at greater risk of mold. The National Energy Action, a fuel poverty charity, said many more people may be forced to go without heating this winter after the government cut back on support payments. Adam Scorer, the chief executive of National Energy Action, said this new data paints a chilling picture of what happened last winter and what's happening again now in millions of homes across the whole of UK. He added people in all tenures are using less but are still paying more. Millions are underheating their homes to the point it could be dangerous to their health or even fatal. The findings have emerged after experts warn that low-income tenants will face higher energy bills as a result of the government's decision to scrap plans to force private landlords to upgrade their properties to make them more energy efficient. UK Prime Minister Rishi Sunak recently dropped a requirement for landlords to meet stricter energy efficiency standards alongside plans to scrap or delay of a range of green measures, which he said imposed a direct cost on consumers. Scorer said beyond the money needed to afford heating, we are also seeing people not able to cook a hot meal or not using hot water for washing. There are people who can't afford to refrigerate their food or medicines and people relying on candles for light. Furthermore, The Independent reports a new study has shown that Britain's cost of living crisis, which mainly results from the government's economic policy, is projected to cause thousands of premature deaths this year. The results of the research were published by the BMJ Public Health Journal. The study showed that the cost of living crisis and sustained period of high prices will reduce life expectancy across the country by 6.5% this year. The predicted increase in premature death from a baseline of 463 per 100,000 people to 493 per 100,000 equates to thousands of extra deaths per year in the UK. The study concludes that the most deprived households will experience four times more extra deaths than the wealthiest households, with the poorest having to spend a large proportion of their income on energy, the cost of which has soared. Evidence shows low income is associated with poor health, and that falls in income adversely affect health. The economic prospects of Britain are rather grim. A report by the Washington-based Peterson Institute for International Economics forecasts that the UK economy will shrink this year and in 2024, with a drop in GDP this year of 0.3%, to be followed by a fall of 0.2% next year. There are fears that the UK, which is suffering from structural economic conditions, factors related to the underlying weakness of the UK economy, and the fallout from Brexit will leave the UK behind, while most other developed economies expand. The UK was also suffering from an unequal recovery that benefited better-off households, while the bottom half of the income basket continued to be affected by falling real incomes. Persistent inflation, falling real incomes of low-income households, and a shortage of workers will result in a drop in the country's gross domestic product. Cuts to government spending next year will also drag on economic growth. The economic crisis and persistent inflation has caused trouble for the ruling Tories in the UK. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak's popularity has fallen to its lowest levels ever. Some 68% of Britons currently have an unfavorable view of the Prime Minister, the highest figure since becoming Prime Minister, but only 23% have a favorable view of him.
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a big welcome to this week's edition of Africa Today.
Stay tuned with Africa Today.
Africa Today.
Israeli regime's brutal war and genocide against Palestinians in Gaza has received widespread condemnation across the globe. Images of Palestinian infants, children, women, and other innocent civilians, including entire families, killed during attacks by Israeli regime forces have ignited anger in all countries. Now, backed by the United States and other Western regional powers, Israeli forces have dropped bombs on hospitals, schools, and places of worship. Now, these genocidal attacks by Israeli apartheid regime have so far left thousands dead and tens of thousands injured. The people of Africa, a continent that suffered the worst ravages of colonialism and racism for centuries, have historically supported Palestine. Africans have come out massively to voice support for Palestine and to condemn Israeli regime crimes against Palestinians. Masses in the continent are now demanding that their governments should cut any relations they have with the Israeli apartheid regime. Now, will African governments listen to the voices of the masses? Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and this is Africa Today. This week, we continue focusing on the issue of the African people standing with Palestine amid the ongoing genocide by the Israeli apartheid regime against Palestinians in Gaza.
Africa standing with Palestine. Spontaneous protests are taking place across Africa to condemn Israeli apartheid regime's atrocities against Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip. Israel started its brutal genocidal war in Gaza on October 7 after the Palestinian resistance movement, Hamas, launched the surprise Operation Al-Aqsa Flood against the colonial entity.
The people of Africa have come out to express unflinching solidarity with oppressed Palestinians while demanding a complete boycott of the Israeli apartheid regime. Recently, a peaceful protest was organized in the Kenyan coastal city of Mombasa to express solidarity with Palestinians.
To all of you who gathered here today amidst the scorching sun, you've shown solidarity with our brothers who are miles away, our brothers in Palestine. We tell them we are with you in both prayers and in person. Mine is the message to the aggressors. They've subjected our brothers to war crimes against humanity. What they're doing today is an extermination. Is an extermination of our brothers in Palestine. And we say to them, no, no, no injustice. Not in our era. We tell them, down, down, Israel.
Down, down, Israel.
Down, down, America.
Down, down, America.
We stand with our brothers in Palestine.
We stand with our brothers in Palestine.
Now, for more on the firm resolve by African people to stand with Palestine, we have contacted Ms. Naomi Barasa. She's the chairperson of the Kenya-Palestine Solidarity Movement. She's also the former campaign director at Amnesty International in Nairobi. Thanks a lot for your time, madam, today.
Thank you so much. I am honored to be invited to your station to talk about the Palestinian question. Thank you so much.
We also have with us today Suhail Omar. He's a political analyst and a member of Kenyans for Palestine. Thanks a lot, Suhail, for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on the show.
Now, since the start of the Israeli regime's genocide against Palestinians in Gaza, demonstrations in support of Palestine are taking place across Africa. Let's start with you, Naomi Barasa, there. What is the message of these solidarity demonstrations in Africa?
We have short-term and long-term messages. In the short term, we are calling for, of course, ceasefire on the bombardment. We are calling for Israeli government to open up Gaza for humanitarian support and total arms embargo in Israel, and then investigations on war crimes by Israel. But in the long term, we would like to say that the African people stand in solidarity with Palestinian sisters and brothers in this struggle against oppression and domination. For us, we have a common enemy, and this is something that for the African continent, we experienced firsthand, and we understand the brutality. We have seen that in Kenya, we've seen that in Algeria, we've seen that in South Africa, and many other African countries. So we really, really, really feel that we must prevail.
Now, the pro-Palestinian demonstration in Mombasa was unprecedented in terms of the large number of people that turned out to condemn Israeli regime's unfolding crime of genocide against Palestinian people. Here is one of the protesters speaking during the protest march.
Why are they doing this to Palestine? We are here at solidarity for Palestine. We might be weak in weapons, but we are very strong in faith, and we shall overcome.
Now, let's bring in Suhail Omar. Now, can you tell us what was the significance of this major protest march in Mombasa?
Once we speak about being in solidarity with the Palestinian people, it means us in ourselves as Kenyans, we're also rejecting this expansion of the Israeli war war mechanism. Because once we talk about Israel, what we know is an establishment of violence, because all the methods of violence that target Palestinians always end up coming back to different demographics, because Israel is training, funding, and arming this different police forces around the world. So the Mombasa protest was quite a significant move, where Kenyans are not only rejecting Israel's annexation and collective punishment and occupation of Palestinian land, but it's quite a key effort to show that Kenyans are in transnational solidarity with the Palestinian people, and we support whatever decisions they take to fight for their land as enshrined within international law and protected by the UN Human Rights Charter.
President Cyril Ramaphosa of South Africa said in a speech at the Cairo Peace Summit that South Africans can relate to the suffering of Palestinians. Let us listen in, and then Ms. Barasa will give us her take.
As South Africans, we can relate to what is happening to Palestinians. Our people waged a brave and courageous struggle to achieve their freedom, and were subjected to untold suffering, just like the Palestinians are going through. But we had courageous leaders who were able to set aside their differences and sued for peace, and were able to bring the abhorrible system of apartheid to an end.
As Africans, we wholeheartedly endorse this sentiment by President Ramaphosa. As I mentioned earlier on, the Palestinians have the right to self-defense, self-determination, and therefore resistance against oppression and domination is a human right. And as Africans, we earnestly hope that our leaders can transform these noble words of Ramaphosa to concrete actions. And we actually appeal to Ramaphosa to ensure that South Africa leads the entire Africa and the African Union in actualizing these words and making sure that this is achieved, because as the masses, as the civilians, we are increasingly becoming impatient. We want to see tangible actions, and we don't want lip services, and we also do not want our leaders to ally themselves to the oppressor. And therefore, we endorse Ramaphosa's sentiments, and we only wish that this can be concretized.
The Israeli regime has not spared places of worship in its genocidal war on Palestinians in Gaza. The Israeli regime bombed the historic Church of St. Porphyrios in Gaza, one of the oldest churches in the world. A member of the Islamic movement in Nigeria says attack on places of worship is an indicator that the Israeli regime is fighting humanity.
People are still saying Israelis are acting on defense. What defense? Yesterday, if you feel they are killing Muslims, yesterday they went and destroyed a church of 1,600 years. They have destroyed it yesterday. Today, they have attacked another mosque of 1,400 years of existence. So they are killing Muslim, Christian, whoever they see, they kill him. It's Zionism that is fighting humanity.
South Africa has long been an advocate for the freedom of Palestine, likening the plight of Palestinians to its own under an apartheid regime that ended in 1994. Now, Naomi, how important was the phone call between South Africa's foreign minister and the leader of Hamas in terms of Africans, and particularly South Africans, standing with Palestine?
Israeli government has cut off supplies, water, food, electricity, and fuel, and blockaded Gaza, causing collective punishment to the people of Gaza. This is a violation of international law. And so this initiative by the Minister of Foreign Affairs is really commendable, and it serves as litmus test to our solidarity as Africans and the imperative that we translate our solidarity into meaningful actions and support for an oppressed community like Palestine. So Palestinians have demonstrated that they have capacity to continue resisting. And we can only strongly believe in this by promptly submitting our available resources to them, and which for now can be in terms of humanitarian support, and call upon the global community to also put pressure. So for us, this is very, very important. And we even ask the African Union, beyond that, to suspend all relationships with the Israeli apartheid regime, and also ask African Union to spearhead and coordinate executing of airlifting of humanitarian aid to Palestine. So this is for us very commendable.
Well, we now take a short break before we continue our topic on how the people of Africa are standing with Palestine. Stay with us.
Africa standing with Palestine.
You're listening to Africa Today. Africa Today is an analytical weekly review of political, economic, and social events in Africa, the world's second largest continent. The series is broadcast every week on Saturdays and Sundays by IRIB English Radio.
Muslim organizations in Nigeria have also raised concerns over Israeli atrocities in Gaza. The organizations call on the federal government to review its relations with the Zionist regime of Israel over its violation of international laws and the rights of Palestinians. Nigeria is the most populous country in Africa and indeed Africa's largest economy.
A member of the Islamic movement in Nigeria says they have been supporting the liberation of Palestine for over 40 years.
The Islamic movement has been calling for justice for the Palestinians for the more than four decades. It's not just now that the Islamic movement started. The Islamic movement started from the beginning. It's one of the frontiers of calling for justice.
Clearly, the Israeli regime is under siege and unwanted in Africa. What impact will the Israeli atrocities in Gaza have on the regime's unending attempts to infiltrate Africa?
I think clearly the Israeli entity is failing and is falling apart slowly by slowly. And that's why they're fighting to establish a lobby in Africa, number one, to establish this fallacious popular vote within the United Nations General Assembly. And even just recently, we saw the fight where the African Union chair had invited Israel to be an observer state, which was also rejected by many of the African states. But away from that, I think the new establishment and what's happening in Gaza is bringing light, and where people are actively rejecting their state's efforts of normalization within Israel.
South Africa's ruling ANC First Deputy Secretary General Nomvula Mokonyane has called for the Israeli embassy in South Africa to be closed. Muslim leaders in Kenya also called on their government to cut ties with the Israeli regime. Let's take a listen.
Send away the Israeli ambassador immediately and recall our ambassador in Israel to come back as a matter of solidarity to the people of Palestine.
Now, this question is for Ms. Barasa. Now, will African leaders listen to the voices of the masses regarding cutting ties with the Israeli apartheid regime?
We clearly see diplomacy is not working, and therefore, can we take other opportunities and other strategies to just make sure that there is enough pressure on Israel to ensure that Israel respects human rights and humanity can mobilize to challenge oppression and injustice? Because at this point, we can't say that that diplomacy is really working. And for us, if the Israeli cannot comply with international law and it violates international law with impunity, then it's important that we just push for that. And that is taken. And remember, furthermore, that Israeli has received support from some veto-yielding powers in the UN Security Council. And for us, it is our historical duty, therefore, as the nations of the Global South, to stand in solidarity with, to stand for justice, but also in solidarity for Palestine. And this can only be through us pushing our governments to withdraw relations, diplomatic relations with Israel.
African countries are facing yet another round of higher costs, particularly skyrocketing fuel prices following Israeli regime's genocide and atrocities against Palestinians. Now, this factor is enough to push African governments to compel the Israeli regime to end its crimes on Palestinians. The leader of South African Economic Freedom Fighters Party, Julius Malema, recently led a pro-Palestinian rally outside the Israeli regime embassy in Pretoria. He called for the closure of all Israeli embassies in Africa. Let's take a listen.
These are terrorists here, and we can't legitimize the terrorists. We must never give them the respect that we give to the deputy ambassador of Palestine. These people here have got no respect for humanity and for life.
Now, this question is for Suhail Omar there. Now, do we expect African governments to heed this call and close all Israeli apartheid regime embassies in Africa?
The people have rejected it, and I do think tangible action will be seen and will be visible, even as it is being visible, because the people are actively rejecting not just the enabling of this of the Israeli violence against Palestinians, but they're also rejecting the government's efforts towards normalization. And it's very present with what's happening from the Mombasa protests to the protests in Nairobi today, and I know there'll be more protests during the week. So it's more of the people are actively taking back their power and using their voices to reject any efforts at normalization. And as much as the Israeli lobby tries to establish itself as an ally to Africa, Africans are aware